This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Road's Rewind.
All right, just had a text message question. Did Norman Lear pass away? No, actually, Norman Lear is, believe it or not, still working. He had a hand in executive producing the One Day at a Time reboot that was on Netflix. I'm not sure where it is now. I know that it was, seems like it's been a couple of different places network-wise. But anyway, he definitely had a part in that, and that was just recently. And they did a documentary on him within the last 5 years, which is phenomenal. I wish I knew the name of it right off the top of my head. If you have not seen that Norman Lear documentary, I'll try and look it up. It is very good, very, very good. One of the most, again, I believe, the most important man on the entertainment end of the television industry, probably, I mean, I was going to say second to no one, probably second to him would be named like Lucille Ball, who you almost have to lump in with Desi because she and Desi invented the sitcom as we know it. They certainly invented the business model for making money on a sitcom. You know, before they got involved with I Love Lucy, sitcoms were done on kinescopes because no one ever believed, no one ever thought there would be a market for reruns. And Desi Arnaz saw that the quality of the kinescopes compared to what was possible if you filmed an episode rather than aired it live. And he and Lucy, out of their own pockets, paid for all that to be done as long as the network allowed them to own the series. That was a billion-dollar decision that will continue to pay off for their families for the rest of eternity, as long as there's a monetary system as we know it. I mean, can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? That's one of the great things, one of the unsung qualities of James Brown, as many bad business decisions as he made, and he would tell you his lack of education cursed him to a lifetime of very, very bad business decisions, and it's something that he regretted to the day that he died. But there was something that Stu Nathan, I believe that was his name, Stu Nathan, beat into him. Was it Sid Nathan? Not Stu Nathan, Sid Nathan. It was the character that Dan Aykroyd played in the movie Get On Up. I think it's Sid Nathan. It was a Jewish businessman who basically guided the first 5 or 6 years of James Brown's career, and he died like on a golf course, heart attack. And when he died, I mean, very unexpectedly, when he died, James Brown thought he was ready to take over the financial decisions, the business decisions, for his band and his career, and he really wasn't. And a lot of people point to that man's death as a very bad turning point for James Brown business-wise. But anyway, getting back to my point, he knew the importance of owning your material, the creative material that you produce in your mind, that you write, that you execute. The heart of your success is being able to capitalize on what you write, what you create financially forever. And he used to call it mailbox money. He said, when you have reached a point in your career when more is coming in your pocket through the mailbox than the box office, he says, you know you've arrived. And he said, it's not a very happy story with a lot of my friends in the business. I'm like, what Mr. Brown said right here on this radio station numerous times. He said, many of my friends in the music business who had stellar careers, he said, you can still hear their music today showing up on the radio, certainly, movies, television. He said, but they don't make money for it because someone either owned what they wrote as they wrote it or they sold their catalog. James leased his catalog while he was alive, but he never sold it. And as a result, his family and his charitable concerns will make money in perpetuity forever. And again, that is a brilliant move. So Lucy and Desi kind of invented that. And Norman Lear certainly has benefited from it through the years. But again, the business model is one thing. The creative spark, the creative energy that Norman Lear brought to television was just unparalleled for its time. And again, he kind of had to drag America kicking and screaming into modern entertainment. And you know, a lot of people cuss that. A lot of people point to it and say, that's where the world started going to hell in a handbasket. Well, you understand. You know what was on the other channels when All in the Family was on? Have you ever looked that up? Well, there were some Westerns that were still on. That was right. The late 60s, early 70s, I think the one that made it the longest of the legendary epic shows was Gunsmoke. And it made it, I want to say, into 71 or 72. But it was really on its last legs. But you take a look at the first year or two All in the Family was on. It was routinely airing against such shows like The Brady Bunch and The Partridge Family on ABC. NBC, I'm trying to remember, was it The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, or maybe it was something like that. There were inane, you know, bubblegum pop culture sitcoms. I mean, just nothing to them. Very little real conversation in those. Not to say that there wasn't plenty of fluff in Good Times and All in the Family and Sanford and Son, but when it came down to it, those shows introduced us to problems and situations that most Americans, particularly white Americans, never dealt with. I never knew what a street gang was until I saw Jimmy Walker take one on. Actually, the entire Evans family on Good Times. And that shows you how sheltered I was. I mean, there were people living in New York and Chicago that knew about it, but not little old Austin in Augusta, Georgia. I can't remember the name of the group, but it had something to do with the Devils because they had a Satan head on the back of their jackets. And I can remember James, the father, James Evans Sr., excuse me, stepping up, getting ready to challenge one of them and then pulling a gun, and how incredibly sobering that was, that this skinny little pipsqueak idiot, I don't know that I'd ever seen that on a TV show before. I'd seen bad guys pull guns, don't get me wrong. I don't know that I'd ever seen such a clearly inferior intellect and human being stand up to a strong, good man in real life. I'm not talking about Batman. I'm not talking about Land of the Giants or Lost in Space or Star Trek. I'm talking about real human beings. Until I saw that, and that really affected me. I was like 8-9 years old, but it really spoke to me. And I was conservative back then. You know, the first thing I thought, that guy's pulled a gun on James Evans. James, where's your gun? That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see somebody shoot that blankety blank that pulled a gun on JJ's daddy. That first thing crossed my mind. Hey, JJ, you get you a gun. Go after that blankety blank.
We're still saying that to this day, aren't we?
I mean, yeah. Geez. Do you remember the housing complex that they lived in Chicago? I don't know that they ever mentioned it by name, but it was... Do you ever remember hearing about the legendary and epic Cabrini Green in Chicago? It was developed as this, you know, Shangri-La for lower income families. This place was supposed to be perfect because it was going to give you, you know, dependable heat and clean water and you know, four walls and bathroom, clean bathrooms, all this kind of stuff. And it turned into the biggest mess. Overrun with gangs, overrun with just all types of nefarious behavior going on. And they did their best, the Evans did. And again, show you a little white guy sitting in Augusta, Georgia watching this. The Evans family, for the many unique issues that they ran into as black Americans, they had the same interpersonal relationship issues that we had in our families. Brothers and sisters fussing with each other. Little brothers bugging the hell out of big brothers. Moms and dads whipping up on the kid not doing his homework, you know, moms and dads fussing with each other. I mean, it was America. And again, you're seeing, I think it helped far more than some of those folks had any earthly idea it would at the time. And I don't mean it helped them with the older folks. I mean, it helped them with the kids. Because again, I'd never been around inner city black folks. Never been around inner city white folks, for that matter. Never been around inner city. Until that show exposed me to what they were doing. I asked my mom, I remember watching that show a couple of times and saying, how come we don't live in places like that here where they have elevators? I'm the only place I'd ever seen elevators. I didn't even know apartment buildings in Augusta, Georgia. I didn't know any apartment buildings that had elevators. They had not built, to the best of my memory, They had not built like Hal Powell apartments and St. John's Towers, old folks places. They hadn't built those yet. I'd never seen an apartment building that had elevators in it. I'd seen apartment complexes, never an apartment building with elevators, and I sure as hell had never seen them in Augusta. Excuse me. There were hotels that I'd been in big cities that had elevators, big skyscrapers, things like that. Never one time been in an apartment building with an elevator, and that's where they lived. I just thought that was the oddest thing in the world. Little did I know about that.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.